Wouldn't it be good if you could talk to all of the future leaders? If you could kind of be a fly on the wall for the Irish future leaders? Well, Rebranding Safety has got that for you. Let's jump into the intro and I'll tell you some more.
The problem in safety isn't deviation, it's complexity.
Health and safety has gone mad.
Health and safety is trying to unpick having gone mad in the past.
There's no one solution and one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution.
Does the structure of the team allow them to flourish?
Feel safe enough to be uncomfortable.
The environment defines our behaviours.
People aren't the problem, they're the solution.
Rebranding Safety, crushing the stereotype. Brought to you by Risk Fluent. What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Rebranding Safety is the podcast and YouTube channel doing exactly what it says on the tin. We're here to change the perception of health and safety and challenge health and safety gone mad practices. So in today's episode, as you probably know, I'm a member of the Irish Future Leaders Steering Group. Very, very proud, very, very humbled to be selected. You know, I'm very happy with it. But I pitched this idea to the group and said, hey, would you guys fancy, you know, once a month coming on the podcast and just chat, like no format to it. Let's just all of us get on and chat and be victim to the Zoom 45 minute limit, because I won't pay for it, which is exactly what happens, as you'll find out at the end of the episode. And that's it. We just kind of get on and chat about what we're doing or what we think or why we joined. And this is just a bit of an introduction to the members that could make it to this call and why we joined. And we just have a bit of a chinwag. It's a bit messy. My dog runs out the door for the first time. We have loads of technical issues. Jason, unfortunately, barely struggled to get on. And then when he did get on, it was pretty much time to end the call. So very, very messy for the first one, but otherwise a great chat. So it's a little bonus episode for you all, 45 minutes long. Listen, be a fly on the wall with a chat with Irish Future Leaders. Let's get into the episode. Right, we're recording. What would this be like, 50%? How many of us are in the group?
Eight.
Yeah, so yeah, 50% of the future leaders on the first one. A reasonable start. Why don't we all introduce ourselves? Philip, you're at my top left, so why don't we start with you?
I'm Phil Lancashire. I'm health, safety and environmental manager for a company called Building Product Design Limited. UK based, ship across the world. We make building products for construction. Main product we do is membrane, wall membrane and roofing membrane. So that's the industry I'm in. Main focus is manufacturing and warehousing and distribution. So big machines, Pure, all those sorts of big things from a manufacturing point of view, factory work. Awesome. So,
Chloe.
Hey, I'm Chloe. I work for Rolls-Royce PLC. So we don't make cars, we make aerospace engines. So cool. That tends to be a misconception sometimes. There is a Rolls-Royce cars, but I don't work for them. So my background, I guess, is I am a public health nutritionist, but I've also got a master's in health, safety and wellbeing, and I've done a NEBOSH certificate as well. So I guess I chose to do health and safety a little bit differently. I've come straight into it rather than a little bit later.
Cool. I like that. A rarity. It's always good to be a rarity.
Thank you.
Kaylee.
Well, yeah, that's one word for me.
I meant it in a nice way.
No, it's okay.
Go on, Hayley.
Hi, I'm Hayley, audit and assurance lead for defence equipment and support, which is part of the MOD. So before I worked for the MOD, I worked for a big logistics company doing health and safety. And sort of went up through the ranks. I started in quite an admin sort of junior role and sort of really got into it.
So I definitely think the ladies have got the best jobs out of us. Oh, Jason's just joined. Let him in. Right, let's go with why you wanted to be on the future leaders. So if Jason comes in, I'll let him introduce himself. Come on, Jason. We've only got 45 minutes. Philip. Why did you join the Future Leaders?
Well, I attended the conference last year. Found it really informative, really interesting. And to be fair, I'd not actually heard of the Future Leaders before that. So thought it was really good. Obviously, it seems IOSHA are aware of issues with regards to young people getting into the industry, I think, and it's something they're looking to address, and it's, I think, something really interesting to be a part of. We all fit that niche, if we want to call it a niche now. And, you know, I enjoy the training and the guidance and the mentoring that I have with the team that I manage. So to try and do things to help a wider community get into an industry or stay in an industry or get people from, you know, as a first choice, I think it's a really interesting prospect. Mm. And I think the young minds together, we can make a real impact and make a real change with it. So now's the time.
Yeah, interesting. It's such an interesting little group as well. When you look around who's in it and what's that, it's quite exciting. Chloe, do you want to give us a quick helicopter view as why you joined Future Leaders?
Yeah, so I guess when I was first starting out, I really struggled to find some young people in health and safety. Everyone I kind of spoken to were much older than me. It was all kind of a second career for them rather than a first-time career. So I was like, oh, how do I go about doing this? And then I managed to find someone else who's quite young in health and safety through the IOSH discussion forum. And he really supported me in getting my career started and giving me some advice on what I needed to do. So I guess when the opportunity to become a future leader came up, it was like, I'd love to support other people who are in the same predicament as me, but they can't find other young people in health and safety and they don't know where to begin or how to get going. So I think for me, it was very much, I can support people. They don't have to feel as lost as I did. And they can kind of get started much easier and probably less time consuming. I think I spent hours on the computer trying to find people. Now there's a community that are literally at the touch of a button, you can talk to any of us guys, and that's such an awesome opportunity that I wish had been around when I was first starting out.
I love that. Hayley, why did you join?
Slightly similar to Chloe, in that I, you know, when I started out in health and safety, particularly where I was working in a logistics company, I was sort of young female and probably one of the only sort of female managers at the site. So that's, I think, quite a challenge when you're new into health and safety anyway, and you're trying to sort of prove yourself and prove your credibility. And so I think it's that network that the future leaders bring of having people like-minded in similar positions, probably facing the same challenges that we've all had, you know, sort of trying to prove ourselves, and that just because we're sort of don't have as much experience yet or perhaps slightly younger doesn't mean we don't have loads to contribute. So I was quite fresh coming into Future Leaders. I didn't realize it was sort of out there until fairly recently. And so now, like Chloe says, to have that opportunity to talk to other people quite easily about some of the challenges, when sometimes you can't talk to people who you work with because I don't think they'd quite understand where you're coming from. So to have someone else just to share that with, I think it's brilliant.
Yeah. And you're not alone. I didn't really, other than the event, I didn't really know much about it or anything. I saw the event last year. I actually didn't go to the event. I can't remember. I think Stuart, maybe it might have tagged me in it, or a couple of people tagged me in it saying, do you want to apply? I'm like, yeah, no, they'll never let me in. I'll apply. Got in, as if they let me in. Jason, can you hear us? Oh, we can't hear you. Can't hear you, mate. I will come back to you whenever you get it fixed. Just shout and interrupt us, and then but I'm gonna crack on because it's a pretty rubbish podcast if I'm just sitting here going, Jason, can you hear me? And something I'd like to discuss, open to anyone, so feel free to just chime in now. Somebody put on the little Teams chat that we've got about always kind of being the youngest in the room. And I think both Hayley and Chloe have just kind of touched on that. But it is this really aging profession, which for me was a massive challenge when I started, always the youngest in the room, which comes with a label, doesn't it? Like one of two, I found, and feel free to chime in. But I found that they either assumed you were just popped out of university and you think you know everything, or you don't know anything because you're too young, you've got no life skills, no life experience. So that was always how I felt like I was being kind of judged. But that was a massive challenge for me. I'd be interested in if anyone kind of come across that or how they felt and dealt with it maybe. Free open table. Anyone can chime in now.
Yeah, I think I absolutely have had that experience. Obviously, I am actually fresh from university.
And think you know it all.
But obviously, I know everything. Actually, I'm the complete opposite. And I think I'm not afraid to admit that. I'm very much like, please teach me everything you know, because I obviously don't have it as much experience as what I'd like to have. And so I do see kind of every single day as a learning day and a learning opportunity. And whenever I've been out with people, I think most people are quite willing to explain things to me in a little bit more detail, or go over things a little bit more than what they potentially would do with someone else. But I am very open about how I see things. I don't pretend to know things if I don't. It's much easier for me to say, oh, I have no idea what you're talking about. Do you mind just explaining it to me? And then they're like, oh yeah, sorry, I forgot that you're not an engineer. And I'm like, yeah, I'm definitely not. But I think sometimes as well, with health and safety, a lot of it, you do actually know it. It's just having the confidence to believe that you know it. And I tend to fall back. I work at the moment with another health and safety manager who's in his 30s, so he's very young, and he's very willing to support me and everything. And he does let me have a try. And then if I've missed something out, he'll go, oh, just to add on top of what she said, there's this as well. So I think that has helped me a lot. He's got confidence in me, and that's given me confidence then to actually get involved, rather than having someone that constantly thinks you don't know what you're on about and kind of won't give you the opportunity to learn.
Yeah, I think there's a perception that we are experts. Like, and I've had this debate a lot of the times with a few people when they say, oh, talk to health and safety, they're the expert. And I'm like, hang on a minute, no. How can I be an expert or engineering when I've never trained to be an engineer? You know, talk to James, he's the expert. Expert on what? I'm the expert on, I don't know what you guys think, but I always kind of explain our roles as we're facilitators of a conversation. We get the right people in the room and we facilitate a conversation. Sometimes we might even play a bit of like professionals, devil's advocate. But I think sometimes it comes with this perception of, you know, health says you're going to come and tell me what to do. But I think you kind of said it there, Chloe. I think that actually the best thing that health says you can do is say, we actually don't know. You're the expert, the guy that does the job. We know the guidance. We know risk. I think if we're experts in anything, we're probably experts in risk and balancing risk and kind of engaging with people and stuff. But I'd never claim to be an expert in engineering or manufacturing or anything like that, because then just never could be. You know, you can't just go and do an EBOSH over 2 weeks and then come into the manufacturing arena and say, yep, I know more than you because I've read Pure once. Doesn't work like that.
I think it's back to what Hayley and Chloe said about confidence, really. I think you said it in one of your previous podcasts, James, about, you know, it's just that majority of the stuff that we have to do is there is a hazard and there's a way to control it. And that's pretty much what legislation is. It's just, this is the hazard and you need to find an effective way of controlling it. It is quite simple and it's overall nature. And like Chloe said, you've got to get the confidence to be able to say, look, this is what I know and this is what we need to do. And it is building confidence, I think, for me, that even though you might be the youngest in the room or the most inexperienced in the room, you have to have the confidence that you do know what you're doing, and you understand what you need to understand to be able to make things safe. I think for me, my personal experience, it's been easier for me because I've not had the experience you guys may have had, because I started at BPD as an advisor under a manager. When I started that role, I was literally no knee bosh, no nothing. It was, you know, I'd got some health and safety experience as an administrator for another company a few years before. So from a ground knowledge, there was very little. And I went to the Nebosh and I was supported by that manager quite a lot. So that helped me integrate into the business better, which has led to me taking over as manager when that person's left. So at the moment, it feels better that way because I feel like the other managers have got the confidence that I do know what I'm doing because I've been there and learned it from scratch from them.
Yeah, built the relationships.
I can imagine it is very difficult going into a business from another business or going into a business where, you know, you've got no experience at all. It must be difficult, especially going from one business to another. I can imagine that is really hard.
I've bounced around a lot of industries, so I've experienced that a lot. But you know, I just don't position myself to know anything. I think I remember my uncle was a builder, and he always said, you know, you undersell and overachieve. So that's kind of what I always say. I just go in saying I don't know anything, and then when I say something, they're like, bloody hell, this guy actually knows what he's talking about. I'm like, oh, okay. But my point is, jokes aside, it's like, yeah, I'm not here to dictate how you work. I'm here to help you work. So you guys need to tell me how you're working, what you're doing, and I'm going to say, well, can we do this? The gun says this, you know, and stuff like that. So, but coming, I think if you position yourself like that, like I've just joined an industry which I didn't even know it, well, I knew it existed, but like didn't even know how big it was in glass and glazing, and I'm just like, well, you know, but I don't know anything about glass and glazing. I don't preach to know anything about glass and glazing, but I know what I know, and that's it. Paley, how are you, did you kind of come across those kind of challenges? Well, I think it might have been yourself that put the comment on Teams, actually, that started this whole conversation, was it? Or did I make that up?
It may have been. If I'm honest, I can't remember, but something that we've also discussed that keeps coming up is this whole idea of confidence, especially when you're new in. And I think a slightly different aspect is, yes, having the confidence that you know your stuff, but also it's having the confidence sometimes to sit up in a management meeting and say, actually, you need to do something else. Sometimes you have to be quite robust, and that's very difficult when perhaps there's groupthink going on, particularly if you're probably one of the younger managers as well, trying to buck the trend. And it can be quite a lonely place to be sometimes, because you can end up doubting yourself a little bit. And it comes down to having this confidence to actually speak out and do the right thing, even if you are slightly uphill battle with it.
I like that, and I think that's such a good. I think we could probably all relate to sitting in a room where everybody's like, "Yep, that's a great idea," and you're sitting there going, "That is a horrendous idea." You know what I mean? Or even vice versa. I've been in I remember sitting in a finance meeting once with loads of these finance bobs, and I can't remember for the life of me why I was
in. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you. Yes.
Three.
Right, I'm going to completely stop what I was talking about. Jason, why don't you introduce yourself, tell us who you are, kind of what you do, and then also tell me why you joined Future Leaders.
Okay, I'll make it brief. Jason Kamalu. Health, safety, security, and environment professional. I work with Wakot Limited, which is a food and agribusiness company of the TGI Group. Basically, my role is HSE manager. So I joined the Future Leaders community because I felt the objective of the FLC aligned with my own career objective. Currently, I have the privilege of volunteering in the Ayosh West Africa Network as the deputy chair. And one of the things we do is we help mentor early OSS professionals, new and aspiring professionals in the profession. So when I saw the advertisement for Ayosh FLC steering group members, I said, wow. This just fits in. So it was so easy for me applying for it because it was really what I do. And then I think another factor that influenced my joining was in January 2020, we had a conference in Lagos for West Africa. And I met one of the board of trustees for Ayosh by name Simon Hartson. He attended with Bev. And then he told me, that was the second time in Nigeria we had met. And he told me, Jason, have you heard of the FLC? I said, no. He said, oh, look, you should give this a try. And then he basically just steered me in that direction. So it was great when I got the mail that confirming that my application had been accepted. I said, wow, this is probably me playing my mentorship role, which I've been playing in the region on a bigger platform. So I think that's basically why I joined IHFLC.
Awesome. You've all got much better reasons for joining Future Leaders than mine. Mine was, I was tagged in a post and thought, yeah, let's give it a go, see what happens. That makes me feel bad.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a shameless sponsorship clip. In all seriousness, guys, we partnered up with DRM Group. You know, David McLean, he's been on the podcast time and time again. We absolutely support his message, and he's got a brand new online course to help you. I'm going to let him tell you all about it now.
The brain can be trained to think and behave differently, to think in more positive and optimistic ways. And there are steps that you can take to train your brain to feel good for good. And we call this lasting positive change. Through our 16-day program, which includes daily videos and action sheets, taking you no longer than 15 minutes to complete a day, you will learn how to move away from thoughts of anger, hopelessness and frustration to a place of mental well-being and positivity.
Okay, guys, so if you're interested, you can click the link below and get a discount, special rebranded safety discount. Full disclosure, we get a little bit kickback from that. So at the same time as improving your mental health, you can support your favorite health and safety podcast and YouTube channel. I'll let you get back into the content.
I'd be interested, where were we anyway? I can't remember. We were talking about confidence and stuff like that, weren't we?
About bad decisions in boardrooms.
Yeah. Oh, that was it. That was it. I was in this finance meeting. I can't remember why I was in it. And I remember them thinking, they were all talking away. And I was just kind of like, why don't they just do this? I can't remember what the example was, but it was something like they were talking about spreadsheets and, you know, VLOOKUPs and all this. And I was just like, why don't they just do this? And I did not have the cojones at the time to say anything. And I was sitting there like, nah, I'm not going to say anything. And I didn't. And then I ended up getting quite good relationship with the head of finance in the factory, basically. And they're sitting there. And it turned out a couple months later, they were still struggling with this problem. And because I'd now got a good relationship with him, I went, why don't you just do this? And he went, that is such a great idea. Why don't we think of that? And I was just like, oh, well, technically, you know, when we had that meeting a few months ago, he was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I was like, well, I kind of had it then, but I didn't really have the confidence, which is a key word, the confidence to bring it up. And he was like, you could have saved me months, months of pain. And I was like, oh, and I learned then, you know, just say. You know, just say. And if you're in an environment which people turn around and treat you like you're an idiot, then you're probably in the wrong environment. But yeah, confidence is a big thing, I think.
It's difficult sometimes, but I think one of the things I've learned in the past is you have to avoid what they class as silos, you know, getting the same people around the table all the time to solve a problem within the department. If it's the same people all the time, you're not going to get those new creative different ideas that you hopefully get. You know, the best thing to do is if there's a problem in an engineering department, then we get, you know, somebody from each department maybe just to sit around a table and go, well, how are we going to solve this? Mm-hmm. Because those that don't know it will be the ones that will ask the stupid questions, shall we say, mm-hmm. and say, well, how did you do that? Or why did you do that? And this, that, and the other. And sometimes those fresh pair of eyes and all that sort of stuff on a problem is the way you get to an easier, simpler solution that, as a manager of a department or a manager of a team, you get blindsided to, I think.
Definitely. Definitely. Anyone else?
I think that resonates a lot. There's, you know, a lot of meetings I can think back to where really simple questions I wanted to ask. Mm. And I thought they're going to think I'm a bit silly or don't know my stuff. So it's almost better if I stay quiet and then I can't be judged either way, which obviously isn't the right thing to do, because it's exactly like we're saying, sometimes those questions need to be asked, because sometimes a lot of the time it is the simple things that's the best solution, especially if you're new in and ask those sort of questions.
Do you sometimes still feel that, I always have this perception, or there was always a perception that as health and safety professionals, we have to know everything at the drop of a hat, you know, I should be able to quote every single regulation that's, you know, in the COSH regs the minute anybody asks. And I don't know if that's still there, but I think from probably my confidence building, I'm more than happy now to say, look, I'm going to have to go back and, you know, have a check or look it up. Because as far as I'm concerned, nobody needs to, you know, drop it out of their brain at the drop of a hat every second. And I just sometimes think it's a foolish conception that we should have all this knowledge just stored in our brains and we just drop it like a computer.
I feel like the worst people for that are actually safety professionals, if I'm honest. I think the worst people for that, the people I engage with that do that a lot, are actual, like, I'll say old school professional.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I was going to say, do you think it's an older generation thing where in the past it was that way? Mm. It was, you know, it's a way of showing your skills and ability, isn't it? But
yeah, and your
things are different now.
And you're, you're kind of talking to them and they're just like, well, paragraph C, subsection 4, line 7 of the Health and Safety of Work Act 1974 states that. And you're just like, dude, I stopped listening like 10 minutes ago.
I think a lot of that might be down to things like NEBOSH, because that is what the examination is. It's kind of like regurgitating legislation and regulations onto paper. And if that's kind of the basis of what your career is, your training, I guess that's all they have. But also sometimes they use it to almost shut people down, as if to say, I know more than you because I can recite this reg and you don't know whether I'm right or wrong. So that's enough.
Yeah. There's a lot of ego in it.
It does come back to the, like you say about the NEBOSH, really, that I'm not saying you know it's an old hat course or anything, because I've done the NEBOSH, but you know, the new NCQR, whichever it is that's come in, that's more, you know, paper based and that sort of stuff, I think has opened the game up a bit more. And I think I remember seeing sort of one of their adverts for their courses on, you know, the back of the magazine or something, and it said something like, you know, I was able to quote Regulation 7 from this regulation at the drop of a hat, and then it said, you know, said nobody ever. And it's just sort of a really interesting way of selling it. And I think, to be fair, that's the way it's changed. I don't think you need to be able to recite lines and lines of regulation anymore. It's just not the thing.
I agree.
It's a broader skill set, and I think that's part of what the webinar is for next week. It's all very well having the qualifications and knowing the legislation, which is very important. Obviously, you've got to know that technical skill. But I think so much more of what the health and safety professional's job is that engagement and that sort of knowing your audience and how to sort of engage with people and get them on board. Sort of quoting reams of legislation probably isn't going to engage the shop floor. It might be more appropriate at board level when you're explaining risks about things. But I think it's those sort of softer skills, the power skills, I think are really just as important now.
I agree. I think a lot of what we do is building relationships with people. We've got to build relationships with employees, with managers, with so many different types of people as well. And we have to tailor how we speak to each one so differently. I think a lot of people don't realise that about our role is we do talk a lot. We do chat to people. We do have to be really approachable, because if we're not, people aren't going to want to talk to us about their health and safety issues or concerns. And sometimes I'm often surprised that some people get into health and safety because one thing they might say is, I really don't like people very much. And I'm like, why are you in health and safety?
I love that. So thanks for continuing that conversation. My dog, for the first time in 2 years I've had him, just decided to run out the front door. So I just had to peg it downstairs. That's never happened. He's so good.
Well, we covered you.
Yeah, thank you for that. Oh, Jesus, my heart's pounding like mad. Honestly, I've trained him. I would open that door, I'd get the shopping in or whatever. He won't move. He will not leave that door. Whereas today, he just ran out. Anyway, so thank you for that. I love what you were saying there, Chloe. If I'm honest, I remember that there's time running out. We've only got 10 minutes. Oh no. But I remember going to doing this training course basically, and it was around fire safety, and I was being extremely honest about the board in not so many of a positive way, extremely honest about a project that I was on, and extremely honest about a lot of stuff. And a lady came over to me at the end and she said, James, that's one of the best training sessions I've ever had. She said, but I can't believe you haven't been sacked yet. And I was like, excuse me? So thanks. What do I say to that? And she was like, you're just so honest. Like when you say this is what we should be doing, but I think that at the moment it doesn't seem like the board's got this as a priority and stuff like that. She's like, you know, I can't believe you're saying stuff like that. You know, I've never been told so honestly before. And I said, I have to be honest with you. And I can't stand here and say we as a business, and there's a fine line to this. I think there is a fine line to it. We have got some kind of confidential stuff that we see a lot of the time that we have to keep back. I understand that. But sometimes there's an opportunity to say, look, this is probably what we should be doing. But if I'm honest, I don't feel like there's a priority in this. I don't feel like we've got the funding. So we're probably not going to see this for a couple of years, something like that, which is just honesty. I need them to trust me. If I say we're going to do this and it never happens, I lose the trust. And then one day when I go into the shop floor or something like that, and I say, whoa, stop. They're like, no, I'm not going to listen to you because last time you told me this was going to happen and nothing happened. Now it's a bit of an over-exaggerated example. And I did leave short after, but I think sometimes it's all about relationships, and it is. And I think that's a point to what we were talking about earlier about not being an expert. We're not an expert. What we are, we have relationships with the people that are the experts, and good, strong relationships as well. So I love what you were saying there.
I think one of the things someone said to me before I started this role was, well, you're not going to have any friends. No one's going to like you in health and safety. Actually, I like get on with so many people. I've got banter with people on shop floor. I know who to go to if I need help with things. And looking back, I'm like, why did anyone say that to me? Because I get on well with everyone, and I'm in health and safety, and I still do my job every day, but I have plenty of friends in work.
My old boss said the same to me. So James, we work in quality, environment, health and safety. You're doing your job right if nobody likes you. And I was like, oh, right, yeah, okay. And now I look back on it and I'm like, nah, mate, it's the complete opposite.
It is the complete opposite. It's got, you know, you've got to build the relationships in this. And the difficulty I think we face majority of the time is that it takes so long to build those relationships sometimes because of the work that we do. You know, some people don't buy into it straight away and it can take time. The minute you don't follow through on something, it all falls apart. Or it can all fall apart, and you have to make sure we're on top of it almost all the time. That, you know, if you say you're going to do something, you have to do it, or, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to fix that, we're going to change this, that and the other. The minute you don't do something, that's where that relationship drops, and it's difficult to pull back up. But it has to be the focus of what we do. The relationships that we build with those people across all the levels from top to bottom is vital to what we do.
Definitely.
I think part of that is who we work with as well. It sort of goes back to, we're not doing all of health and safety. We're there to facilitate it. So we need everyone on board, right at the top level downwards, to make things happen. And I think that's particularly frustrated when we do make promises or have actions, and then through sometimes no fault of our own, because we haven't got that level of support there, things don't follow through, and then that trust is lost, and those relationships are very difficult to then build back up, and it's really frustrating.
Yeah, and you're kind of seeing that now, aren't we, with coronavirus. Like, I remember seeing a post, I've screenshotted it actually, I've saved it for any future keynotes, but there was a gentleman that put on this thing, and I won't use the exact phrase he used, but it was, you know, all these years you've been telling us to wear our hard hats and high vis, and now we really need you. Where are you now? And it was mid pandemic, like, and I was just like, wow. And there's two aspects to that. The company might have been driving that safety person to be like, PPE, PPE, PPE. We don't know that. There's no context to that. So that we can't really judge the health and safety professional. But at the same time, where are you now? I know a lot of safety professionals that were furloughed pretty early on. So where are you now? Is I'm sitting at home sipping on a margarita because I've got no other choice.
Yeah, it's very difficult.
In our business, health and safety have been praised massively for getting on top of everything and making sure that people could come back to work safely. So I've had a completely different experience, I guess, to what you've just said, because we were seen as business and safety critical, so we had to be in, and we still are now. Maybe one or two have been furloughed, but on-site safety professionals have been there preparing everyone. So I guess while everyone else did get furloughed, we were there working. So I guess that has been a different overview in our business of safety. It's actually really helped us as professionals to be taken a little bit more seriously, but also to be recognised in the business where maybe we weren't previously.
Yeah,
I totally agree. I think it's been a terrible time. You know, a lot of people have died and a lot of people have been ill, and it is a tragedy, but it has been a massive opportunity for us as a profession to continue to raise the profile of our industry. It has categorically pushed health above safety for a period of time. Even though I think that was coming up to level pegging, I know, with all the mental health that's been going on for the last few years, starting to bring health back up to the level of safety. But I think this has just propelled health further forward. And I think now's the time to capitalize on it all. You know, if we can make the right changes and the right improvements to allow people back to work safely now, that continues to build on those relationships that we were talking about earlier, to continue for us to be strong in the industries that we're in and the businesses that we're in, and that, you know, people are going to come to you with accidents and hazards and this, that, and the other, because, you know, we behaved in the right way during the pandemic and did the best that we could to make sure people were safe. So the more we can capitalize on it as an industry, I think the better.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. I think we should almost be seen as sort of business enablers rather than a hindrance, because our role is so much more. It's not just the health and safety. We're also risk managers. It's about business continuity, working with HR. We've got such a broad spread, I think, as a health and safety professional. I think the role has changed and will continue to change going into the future to be quite broad.
I agree, and I think that's what's so great about this job is it's different every single day. We meet different people every single day. It's such a great experience, and I wish more people knew how great health and safety is as a career, because, I mean, we've all just verbalised how much we enjoy our jobs, and that's not the impression I got when I first came into health and safety. I was like, am I going to be miserable? And actually, I've been so happy and I had such a great time. I feel frustrated that no one was like, this is going to be the best job you'll ever do.
No, definitely. I think I'm going to finish it out here, by the way, because we've only got 1:36 to go. So thank you all. Jason, you've not really spoke much, so I apologize for that.
Yeah, I'd like to say something.
You've got 1:26. Go.
Okay, so great contributions from everyone. I'd just like to just give one or two inputs from my perspective. Looking at the ISO 45001 clause 4, one thing I really appreciate that really impacts OHS profession and the business organization we work is and the context of the organization. I feel we will succeed as professionals once we understand the context of the organization where we find ourselves. And that won't just be the organization, but also the context of the organization and the geopolitical
it's gonna cut you off.
Factors that come to play. So
definitely. I'm sorry, Jason, but Zoom's going to cut you off in about 10 seconds. So I'd rather me cut you off than Zoom cut you off. I'm really sorry. And you froze as well anyway. So, but
no problem.
Next week, when next month, sorry, when we do this, you're going to be the one talking.
Okay, guys, hope you enjoyed that conversation with Future Liz. We'll do this bonus episode. We'll either slot it into the schedule, or if we're doing like a mini series or something like we are currently, we will just drop it in. So, hope you enjoyed it. Fly on the wall with the Irish Future Leaders. We're going to try and do this every month if we can. Keep it real flexible, real, like, just loose and not structured. Just all of us just chin-wagging. If there's anything you want to see from us Future Leaders, you've got an idea, let us know. Come message me and I'll feed it into the group. You know all the social medias. If not, they're linked in the description below. I'll also link the forum to Irish Future Leaders in the description below, so you can go check that out. Otherwise, peeps, I'll catch you in the next episode. Safe.